Going through our mission statements today, right now, we're going to be talking about loving each other authentically. So the next part of our mission statement. And I want to start by giving you guys a very short intro. Okay, fill in the blank.
Baby,
hey, good job, good job. Yeah, I practiced and I tried very hard that during this session, I will not say what is love. But if I do, you are allowed to fill in the blank.
Yay.
All right, at any point. Anyways, so we're gonna start off with a short icebreaker in your groups. All right, so I want you to discuss, share what is something you like, what is something you love, and what is the difference? Yeah, I think it's important that we think about this difference between like and love because it helps us better define what love is. Whether it's the depth of feeling, what you're willing to give up for that, whether it's just the object of affection. It's important to realize that there is a difference between liking something or someone and loving it. Especially as we're going to be talking about loving each other authentically. And so what I'm going to do is break it down to discussing love and how to define that biblically, discussing loving each other, and loving authentically. So those are the three things that we're going to go through. So we're going to start with defining biblical love. The Bible has a ton to say about love. There are many different passages that look at it and talk about it. And so I'm just going to highlight a few key things that I want to mention and have us focus on. And first thing is that is the two greatest commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. And I think it's important to see two things with both of these commandments. First of all, love is commanded. The Bible seems to think that love is something that you can command. It's not just a feeling that comes and goes, something that you can be told, yeah, take these actions and do this. Do things in order to develop these feelings towards one another. And so it's not just the feeling, it's this command. And then on top of that, love involves another party of some sort, either God, neighbors, maybe some of you talked about people in your life or activities that you have. There's always some other party. There is room for self-love. Dustin talked a little bit about that last night with the Ezra passage. But here in these two commands, it's your neighbor and it's God. There's some other party involved when you love. So there's the two greatest commands. And then I also wanted to point out love in John 3:16. It's a pretty classic verse. Is it up on the board? Oh, it is. I forgot I sent that to you. But yeah, I think we all know it. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but shall have everlasting life. And that first part, it's talking about love. It's giving us an example of what God's love looks like. God's love is so much for the world, for the people in this world, that he is willing to give up his own son. And so we see that God's love is self-sacrificing. That biblical love should involve some sort of sacrifice from us. And so we see that. Love is self-sacrificing. And then there's the famous passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I'm not going to read through the whole thing. I'm just going to look at part of it. But I really encourage you to go look at it. It's every wedding just about quotes it. Because it has a lot to say about love and what... I almost said it. But it has a lot to say about love. And so... I'm just going to read the first few verses. Paul says this. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. So Paul is writing this letter to the Corinthians. There's a lot of problems in the Corinthian church. But they're having a big issue with how they're using spiritual gifts. They're really obsessed with speaking in tongues to the point where it's actually causing problems. And so Paul is building up this argument to discuss, like, hey, let's not cause problems with spiritual gifts. Let's do good things with spiritual gifts. Let's build each other up. And so he's building this argument, and he gets to chapter 13, and he's establishing, here's how you should use spiritual gifts. Here's how you should interact as a church. And he says it's through love. He says love is the foundation from which you act. Love is the foundation for all your spiritual gifts. And that's why he starts off by talking about, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels. So if he does all of these things that the Corinthian church are really excited about, speaking in these tongues, showing that they have these spiritual gifts, but he doesn't have love, it's just noise. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to remember. It's not going to help anybody. It's just annoying. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge. So speaking in tongues, he also talked about getting words from God and speaking that to people and understanding that. And And so having this knowledge and this wisdom that you can share with people around you. He says, if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, so you have that faith of the size of a mustard seed that Jesus talks about, and you're able to command mountains and they can move, you're able to perform miracles and heal people and change lives, but I don't have love, it means absolutely nothing. All the knowledge in the world, all the understanding of God in the world, all the faith and miracles that you could possibly do mean nothing if you don't have love. It's absolutely useless. If I give away all I have and if I deliver up my body to be burned. So if I'm so generous that I'm willing to give all that I have, but it's not out of love. So maybe it's out of selfishness. Maybe it's out of pride. You want to show people around you that you're better. That's not out of love. And so if you don't have love, all of these spiritual gifts, all of these spiritual disciplines are useless. So love is foundational to everything that the church is supposed to do. And he goes on in this chapter to talk more about love and define it more. And it's really great and it's really beautiful. If you have time, you should read through it and meditate on it. But I just want to highlight one other part of what he says, of something that he kind of hints at, is that love is really tied to humility as well. He says it's not envious and it doesn't boast. So it's not trying to build itself up. It's not trying to tear other people down. It's not focused on that. It's humble. And in addition to love being humble, being loved requires humility as well. To be open and willing and vulnerable to accept the love from other people, it requires humility. And in all honesty, that's probably why I struggle with being loved the most, is because pride is one of my issues, one thing that I struggle with. So we see from just these few passages that love is something that could be commanded. Love involves somebody else. It's self-sacrificing. It's foundational, and it requires humility. And there's so much more to what the Bible has to say about love, but I just wanted to highlight those. And so now I want you to discuss in your groups, and feel free to, if you want to, write out your answers before you start sharing as a group. But we're going to read through a few passages. So read through these passages in a group and then discuss how do these passages define love. But we're going to keep going on to loving each other. And so in loving each other, we're really talking about community and what it looks like to be in a loving community. And I feel like I've done a fairly decent job of showing that the Torah encourages a loving community. Yes? I got some nods. Sweet. I feel great now. Life goal accomplished. So, I can just leave. So I won't go through everything. I just want to highlight one law to see one part of what it means to love in community. And so that's going to be in Deuteronomy 23, verses 24 through 25. All right. So it says this. If you go into your neighbor's vineyard, you may eat your fill of grapes, as many as you wish, but you shall not put any in your bag. If you go into your neighbor's standing grain, you may pluck the ears with your hand, but you shall not put a sickle to your neighbor's standing grain. So what on earth does that have to do with love? Well, it shows something important. It shows that there is this invisible line between love and taking advantage. Somebody who is poor, who is in need, is allowed to go into somebody else's vineyard and take a few grapes, eat what they need. They're allowed to go into somebody's field and take some grain and eat what they need. But they're not allowed to start harvesting stuff, to steal from them. Because there's this line between what it is to accept generosity, to accept love, and what it is to take advantage of the other person. And so here, you can see where that line is. It's when you start actually harvesting something that belongs to somebody else. In our everyday life, it gets more complicated because we have these different relationships, different scenarios going on. You know, if you're just in a conversation with somebody, there's love that's being accepted, there's love that's being given at any moment. And you have to use your wisdom, use your discernment in order to understand where that line is. You need to, if you're the person who should be showing and giving love to another, you need to think through, am I being generous? Where's my line? Where's my, to use a buzzword, where's my boundary? That now I'm not showing love, I'm being taken advantage of. And have that discernment in your own life. And then if you're the one receiving love from others, you need to think through and be discerning and think of the other person even as you're the one receiving love. And think through, when have I gone too far? Am I taking too much from this person? Am I expecting too much from this person? And so even in that way, when you're receiving love from somebody else, you're still trying to show love to that other person by having discernment, by having wisdom, and thinking through where is this invisible line in our relationship. So I just wanted to point out that loving each other requires that wisdom, requires that discernment, requires thinking of each other. And then I wanted to move on to talking about community and love and how it's the foundation, how it's the key to church unity. So Paul, in just about every letter, talks about church unity. It's almost as if it was a big problem back then. I don't know. I mean, it's not like we have that problem now. Like, our churches aren't, you know, splitting and hurting each other, and we don't have any sort of infighting in our churches. No. No, we're completely unified. No, we still have problems. So he talks about unity a lot. And an important thing about church unity is unity is not uniformity. To be unified does not mean that everybody is the same. In fact, Paul over and over again talks about how we're different and how that's a good thing. How we are supposed to be different, how we have all these different roles, how we have all these different body parts in the body of Christ. How we have all these different ways that we should be working together. And when we do work together, then beautiful things can happen. And so we have in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 15 and 16, he's talking about this unity. He's talking about what the end goal of this unity is. And he says this, "Rather speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love." So he's saying that we're supposed to be unified by speaking and acting towards each other in love. And when we do that, we value each other's differences, we value different perspectives, we value different spiritual gifts that we all have, different roles that we all play in the church. And we love each other that way. And as we do that, we grow up in unity. We grow and we mature so that we become more like Christ. Because that's what we want as a church. That's what we want as a unified body. We want to become more like Christ in the way that we act towards each other, in the way that we act as a community. And so we're joined together in all of our differences, and we work together so that we build up and we become more loving. And so it's this beautiful cycle where you start out with love towards each other. You start out loving all the differences in the church, all the different roles that people play, all the different gifts that people have. And by doing that, and by allowing people to have their differences and to use their differences for Christ, you build each other up and you become more loving. And it just ends up being this wonderful, beautiful cycle. And so that's the importance of church unity. That's the importance of loving each other in a community. So now we have our next couple of questions. How have you been loved by others? And how can you love this community? Yeah, so we're going to move on to loving authentically. So authenticity, I feel like that's a popular thing right now, or at least it was back when I actually paid attention to social media in the year, something or other. And I'll get to why that's actually an issue in a minute. But in order to talk about loving authentically, I actually wanted to talk about what inauthenticity is. And I thought of this really great example from a book I read in college. The book is called The Cure. It's not a band. But it's an allegory of this guy who's seeking God. He's trying to find him. And so it starts out and he finds this group of people who all are seeking after God. And he's really excited because he's finally found this group that he gets to be a part of, that is doing the thing that he's desiring. And so he comes in and it's this beautiful ornate room, and you've got all these people who are well put together and look very beautiful as well. And you've got this hostess who comes up and she has a smile on her face. And he sees the smile and he doesn't question it too much, but he says there's just something a little off about it. Can't quite put it, but there's something just slightly off. But he's so excited to be there, so he just moves forward with it. And he's like, oh, I'm so glad I finally found you guys. And he kind of comes in and makes this big kind of show of coming in and meeting all these people. And he's like, how is everybody doing? And all the conversations kind of stutter for a moment as they look at him. And it's kind of like, ew, what are you doing? And there's one guy from the crowd, like he comes forward and he's a well put together guy. And he says, oh, we're doing fine. You know, yeah, I'm doing great. My family's doing great. My kids are doing wonderful in school. I'm doing great in my job. Yeah, I'm about to get a big promotion. Yeah, we're fine. We're fine. And we got the main character's kind of like, well, that was a little weird, but okay, we'll just move forward. And the man who walked up to him says, like, asks him, how are you? And the main character is like, well, actually, I've been struggling with kind of this and that, and it's been really hard, and that's why I'm really excited to be here. And the hostess who's there just cuts him off and is shh, 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 and then reaches behind her podium that she has and pulls out a mask and hands it to him. And then the other people in the room see him receive the mask, and like they nod at him encouragingly to put it on and to act as though everything's fine. He's fine. He's not actually dealing with any of those things. He shouldn't share all of that right away. That's an inauthentic community. And Jesus talks about this as well. In Matthew 23, verses 27 through 28. He's talking about hypocrites, people who do things for the wrong reasons. He says this, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, For you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. So you also outwardly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." So he's describing these people who, so the scribes and Pharisees are doing this maliciously. They're doing all these acts so that people want to praise them, people want to follow them, people want to serve them and worship them. But inwardly, it's all corruption. It's all death and decay. And I don't think anyone in this room would be inauthentic for malicious reasons. I don't. But we might do it out of pride. We might do it out of fear of other people. And the image that Jesus describes there, the whitewashed tombs, that's a phrase that's kind of old, it's a little bit cliched. And so I just want to take a moment for us to kind of really picture that in our minds. It's these beautiful, ornate, grand buildings. You know, picture the pyramids in Egypt that people from around the world will go to and flock to in order to see and visit and take pictures of and tell everybody else that they know, yeah, I went to see the pyramids, or the Taj Mahal, this beautiful, amazing building, amazing complex that people will go to and visit. And it's amazing, it's beautiful, and it's recognized by everyone as, wow, that's incredible. But inside both of those things, it's death, decay. Rotting corpses, mummified bodies, bones. Things that would make us vomit. So when you're inauthentic, when you're wearing masks and hiding who you really are, you might put up this amazing, beautiful front that everybody is impressed with. But inside you're just dying. Inside, you're hurt. And the only cure to that is to be open and to be honest. To take off those masks, to actually be authentic so that people can love you. There's two dangers of authenticity, though. Two ways of doing it wrong. The first one is fake authenticity, which is ironic to begin with. But this is I mentioned, like, it's kind of popular right now. It's the social media influencers who show a video of, like, yeah, come with me along my normal morning routine that I have every day. And it shows the video of them, like, waking up in bed and, like, they've already got makeup on and their hair done and there's a camera in their face. And, like, how authentic could this actually be? Is that? That's fake authenticity. And I think we can... You think for a second and you can kind of identify something like that. And that's not something that I don't think any of us in here are influencers, right? This is your time to admit it.
I have 400 followers on X.
Wow.
I think most of them are bots.
Yeah. Yeah, most of us aren't influencers. Except for Dustin, apparently. So what does fake authenticity look like in our lives, in our actual lives? Well, it's careful selection of what you share with other people. It's deciding, oh yeah, I can be, you know, this vulnerable, but the stuff that I'm actually dealing with, nah, I'm not gonna share with the people who care about me. Because I want them to think that everything's fine. I can be this vulnerable and say, yeah, my week was hard because of this or that, but not because of the thing that I'm actually dealing with. I'm not sharing that to the people who want to actually help me. So that's one danger, the fake authenticity. And the other danger is the soapbox authenticity. This is when you word vomit your entire life. It's the sharing a little too much on the first date kind of thing. And it's an issue because you're not leaving room for others. That's the danger of soapbox authenticity. So when you're in a conversation, you decide, yeah, I'm just going to spill my guts about everything and not actually let you talk about yourself. So you may be asking, how do I find that middle ground that's not fake, but it's also not soapbox? And the answer is, when you're living with fake authenticity, you're still concerned about what other people think about you. That's what your focus is. You're not focusing on sharing your true self. You're focused on being seen well. And then on soapbox authenticity, you don't want to see others. You're not actually caring or loving the people around you. It's all selfishness. And so it's by letting go of your selfishness and letting go of what other people think about you, that's where you can find the middle ground, where you can find the authenticity that's required for love. So this final part of loving each other authentically means that by revealing our true selves and seeing others, we make it possible to love each other authentically. And so I want you guys to discuss two more questions, and I'll give you an out if you're just not quite there yet, not ready to share with people in your group. You can write it down on your notebook. That's okay. But the two questions: what mask are you wearing today? And what can you do to take it off? All right, guys. Sorry to cut things off.
Bro, we're going through identity crises right now.
I know. I know. I'm really sorry. Tell you what. I'll give you guys, I'm going to give you guys one more set of questions, and then we'll have about a 10-minute break. Yeah, we're going over time. But real quick, I just want to read this quote from C.S. Lewis about love. To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything in your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. So you guys can keep discussing in your groups, but I want you to think about these three questions: who, when, and how. Who will you show love to? When are you going to do it? And how are you going to do it?